Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Wesley Mission Victoria and broadcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Thank you for joining me for the second of a three-part program on the life and times of Jack Charles. Jack is one of the Stolen Generation, and in part one we learn much about his early life. But Jack is not a man who compartmentalises his life as everything is connected to everything else. And so it is that as he unravels his life story, he constantly ties the past, present and future together. Jack is the last surviving original Indigenous elder of the Australian Black Theatre. He's also a writer, performer, singer and a potter, and he ties all these elements together, as exemplified in his show Jack Charles vs. the Crown. Jack opens his soul to us and holds nothing back in regard to his now cured drug addiction and life of crime. He doesn't ask for sympathy, but what he does expect is understanding, for what he's gone through is a journey many other Indigenous people have and still are going through. This is a superbly told story, and you will not want to miss one moment. We pick up with Jack talking about his introduction to live theatre as a performer at the age of 19. Did you want to do it at all?
I wanted to do it. You know, I was the only game one, you know, with my hand up. There was only one Aboriginal, so the irony is I had to black up, you know, to make my skin look equal with the white fellas, you know. But I had a better base. You could see the streaks on their makeup on their face, but not with mine. But I loved the idea. I was getting into theatre, and theatre you have makeup, you know, so I enjoyed all that, you know. But the other thing with Box Hill Boys Home is that there was a lot of abuse up there. And I was in the forefront of it, I suppose. I was roundly abused. But the story goes now that I like to say that is on my last jail sentence, right, so I was approached by a bunch of fellas in jail there, all collecting their methadone and that, and they said to me, "Do you remember us, Jack?" I says, "No, fellas, I don't, no." And they said, "Well, we were in Box Hill Boys Home with you, mate, you know." I said, "Oh, wow, well, good on you, fellas." He said, "Well, Jack, we're part of a class action group. Many of us outside and in jails are part of a class action group against the Salvation Army Boys Home, Box Hill Boys Home in particular. And we know the parole board's going to boot you out soon, so we'd like your phone number to give to the class action lawyers, because we reckon you're the person to validate, give credibility to our stories." And, you know, it's Mr. Sangster, and they mentioned a few names, and I said, "Oh, that's, you know, when you mention those names, fellas, you're opening up a can of worms for me." I thought, well, truly behind me. So I waited when I got out, and that was one of the elements of stabilising my life post-prison. And that, and the other one that allowed me to came out being stabilised, that I had the key to my unit when I first went into jail. So my unit was held for me here. There was a bed sit on the first floor here at that time.
Right.
So so that for the first time I was leaving a prison not being homeless.
That's really important.
So that changed my life, because instead of going around getting a whack, I came home and, came back to my place.
Yes.
And I was already off to shit. All my job then was to start jumping off the methadone, and I was already, you know, on the way before I left prison with that in mind, that I was going to do that, you know. It took me 3 years after I left to jump off it.
Is it a fair comment to say that downhill spiral resulted from your early experiences?
Most of us in the homes of the Stolen Generations, and most people in homes who failed our adopted people and foster people, ended up in Royal Park Home for Juvenile Offenders for having failed our foster people and adopted people. So I was jailed, but my boss bailed me out and got me digs in Glenferrie, close to Auburn, where I worked. So, but it was the first time, you know, in a jail situation.
Yeah.
And then I write about it in Jack Charles versus the Crown. Not really. Not really, because there are other failed adopted kids from Box Hill Boys Home okay. that I knew, you see.
Right.
So they all knew me.
Yes.
You know. And my first sighting of other Aboriginal kids in there too, you know.
What was that like for you? Was it strange or did you...
Yes, I found that there was a bigger world beyond because they were saying that so I'm related to them and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Was that easy for you to understand?
Yeah, it was easy for me to understand because, you know, I'd realised that I don't know who my mum or anything like that is, you know. So... and I accepted it, you know, willing to accept, you know, somebody black coming up to me and saying, listen, I'm a Harrison, your mum and my mum are sisters and all that kind of stuff. These are the first things you get to hear, you know, it locks in up here in the conscience.
I believe that's the really important part of your culture, isn't it? This connection with the families that go back through the generations.
Yeah.
So you must have felt very isolated for a long time, not knowing about you.
All the time. I was always isolated. But also the raping and all that kind of stuff left me into, you know, it led me into a life of homosexuality. I thought that that's what Box Hill Boys Home did for me.
In
the simplest of terms, that's what it did.
Yes.
I did have a relationship with a bloke for 5 years and that, but ever since that, it's just been on my own. I just don't... I won't open up or won't have relations with anybody anymore and that, you know. I'm happy to just work in theatre and be my own and, you know, waiting around for any other lost brothers and sisters to come forth.
I believe, and I might not have the story correct, so correct me if it is wrong, that you also discovered you had a great-grandfather or something. Is that correct?
Yeah, great-great-grandfather, Johnny Charles.
How did that come about?
Through writing the stories, Jack Charles versus the Crown.
Right.
Gaining information from Bastardy the Doco, getting information from the Heritage Trust and that. It's all there, all notated and that. And the story was that Johnny Charles was, a Jar Jar Warung man from around Ballarat there.
Right.
Bendigo and all that, removed from that area because of the mining and all placed up there.
So did he end up at Corranderk?
Corranderk, Johnny Charles. He was shot up there, as a matter of fact. They killed him. They killed him. Oh. I got the evidence saying that he accidentally shot himself going through a fence looking for a lost boy one Christmas with his shotgun. I don't believe that. We don't believe those kind of things because they were still killing blacks, right, you know, and even later in years.
A convenient story, isn't
it? It was a convenient story. So my sister, my last surviving sister, known sister and I, we don't believe that.
Well, with good validity.
Yes. We don't believe that. And he was a letter writer, okay. He wasn't described for many of the petitions, the famed Corranderk petitions. You can read these famed Corranderk petitions in the Parliamentary Library and this... To show Corranderk, we will show them. The words that the six actors do in the story of Corranderk are taken directly from the Parliamentary Library of the from the four Royal Commissions into the management and the decision of what Parliament...
That's a pretty accurate story then.
Oh, yes, it's right there. It's all notated now. So all the letters that were written in, all the goings-on, the to and froing are all in the Parliamentary Library. So every word we utter has been spoken. I play William Brack, the chief of the tribe, and I do his language, Wirrung language too. I do the petition in his language.
Did you have to learn that language?
Yes, I had to learn. Over the years, as an actor, over in the West, I've worked over there.
Right.
I remember being actually paroled at Janet Holmes' a court at the Black Swan Theatre over in the West, you know, because they wanted somebody my vintage. For Jack Javis's No Sugar tour, the second tour around Australia with that show. They wanted me for 9 months and I had the parole board 6 months. So the parole board, paroled me to Janet Holmes' court and that, you know. And so there's a lot of little, you know, wonderful little stories like that have happened in my life and that, you know.
They are wonderful stories.
I hadn't trod the board for 17 years I've been doing a lot of, you know, I did a couple of movies in between jail sentences in those years, Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith,
that was a major film, wasn't it?
Yeah,
for Australia.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you?
No, very good. I was very heavily addicted too. I did it, you know, really stoned in that, but... Right. It was one of my best acting bits, I reckon.
Oh, look, it's considered as a great Australian movie.
Yeah, I thought I did well in it, and Freddie thought I did well in it, Freddie right. Skepsy.
Yes.
That, but you had Freddie Reynolds and Tommy Lewis and Bob Mazza, who was the Aboriginal wrangler,
right.
Uncle Bob Mazza. He got all the blackfellas together for the blackfella camp scenes that, you know. But I always found time to do something in the arts between doing jail sentences. And that, you know, suddenly I was one of Melbourne's better class cat burglars. That's why I was in jail a lot. I only robbed on the more wealthier side of the Yarra. I was more comfortable, you know, walking around Kew late at night because we're under his soil. I'm on my land.
You're on your land.
Collecting rent on my mum's land. Down Brighton. Sounded reasonable to me, but, you know, justifications for any addict's tongue can roll glibly off any addict's tongue, yes. But especially mine, you know. And, you know, you have to make some, you know, to be able to live with yourself, you know, entering people's castles and things like this. But at the back of my mind, a tiny thought always says, yeah, well, these large edifices, these large mansions are built on Aboriginal land, prime real estate. This is how it goes when you're really fucked in the mind and that, you know.
Yes.
And that these are the thoughts that go through my mind at that time. And still do, because, you know, I find it hard to be reconciled. This reconciliation business is really, you know, I stay well away from it, you know. I have reconciled myself, you know, with my past by continuing allowing people like yourself to access me so I can be unleashed, you know, into your program and tell stories and that.
I have to say, Jack, that sitting here talking with you, one of the things that really grabs me, amazes me, is that you have gone through, if I might put it this way, really a lot of hell in your life. And a lot of injustice, yet you sit here so relaxed. And
I think the heroine kind of allows you to put certain things behind you, set it aside, and the art is not to make it to completely run or influence your life to a point that you become incapable of seeing the larger picture, both sides of the story, I'm saying. And I know both sides of the story, you know. And I know that, you know, well, I do still fear for the race.
Oh, again, using this word often now, with great justification.
Mm.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
I'm Rob Greaves and I'm speaking with Jack Charles. Jack is an elder statesman of the Boonwurrung tribe and also a very much respected actor and musician.
You don't appear to have anger in you. Is that
a... That said a lot. So, you can say quite confidently that I take my rage to the stage, to the film, right. To the events that I talk at, to give welcome to country. You know, look, yesterday, the day before, I was up in Bendigo, in the old jail up there, opening it up with the first show performed in the old jail, a 1,000-seat theatre, state-of-the-art theatre, has been attached to the old Bendigo jail, right next door to the college up there, Bendigo College or whatever. And so I was able to wax lyrical. I was the narrator for the show, the storyteller. Between the songs, it was musical event, but I was the man with the stories of Zhao Zhao Wurrung, reading the stories and telling stories of my own too throughout the other night. To be in Bendigo Jail, you know, I was able to say, well, this is the jail that to give me my third, fourth, fifth, and sixth form here. And It was, you know, reputed to be one of my favourite jails because I did well here. We had a rock group here, a band and all that. Yeah. And I did my time very easy here. But the week before, I was in Castlemaine Jail doing a play in the old yard there. And the irony is that I used my old cell as my dressing room there. But Castlemaine Jail was my favourite jail because a wall jail, because I learnt the fine art of pottery in there up to year 12 level. And I became Victoria's prison's hotshot Corey Potter, shanghaied from a wall jail to an open camp to set up pottery and to teach up to year 12 level in ceramic, of ceramica in prisons. And that. And I called my pottery shops in jail Psycho Ceramica, because you had to be a crackpot to be in the nick in the first place.
So, but love the time.
And you weren't allowed into Psycho Ceramica if you were a Rohypnol or Serapaxed off your tit, because you were like a bull in a china shop. So I ran it with an iron fist.
Yeah.
I did. I set rules and it worked. We made a profit in every pottery shop that I worked in prison. We made a profit.
What was it that drew you to pottery? Because we're talking about your acting.
Well, there's no pottery in Aboriginals. No, we don't make pots and that.
That's why
we cover our dead bodies with white clay and stuff like this in some parts, especially the Eora where they landed up there. So consequently, the Eora mob, the Gadigal mob up there in Sydney, saw these white people coming up, thought they were the returned dead, and recognised certain sailors as relatives of theirs and that, you know. Yes, yes.
Yeah, never
so, but
that.
Yeah, but clay, we have quite a few Aboriginal potters around Australia over the years. A famous one is Than Coopy from Tiwi Island. Brazil always loves her work there. She has a fine showing over there every year. I don't know if she's still alive, but Than Coopy, you know, her pots were similar to. I've never met her or seen her, but Foley pointed it out to me, Gary Foley. Our great tutorialist, he pointed it out to me that your work is similar to hers, Jack.
Right.
You know, but yes.
This is a reasonable question. Hmm? Doing the pottery and working with your hands, does that give you the same pleasure as your stage work?
Yes. Matter of fact, in Jack Charles versus the Crown, I got a pottery wheel and I throw about three pots during the course of doing Jack Charles versus the Crown show. Hmm? I do my master classes. I have a couple of my master classes that I ran in jail, I put into the script, into the show. So
amazing. What about the musical side of Jack?
Oh, we've got a band. Oh, but music, I've always said, well, when I did leave Box Hill Boys home right, and went to, you know, Glass Beverly and that, you know, there was this great big huge Weber machine, it was called, a big long machine, had four tracks on it. You put four panes of glass. They could be, you know, 15 feet high, or they can be, you know, louvered glasses. You know, put these four on this track with a pulley behind it to push it over these four wheels with running water and over stone wheels with grooves in it to give it the round edge and smooth it off and that, you know. And once those panes of glass were going over those wheels, it set up an awful screaming racket and that. So I used to sing in harmony to those sounds. And I'd sing middle-of-the-road songs, ballads, you know, Man of La Mancha, stuff like this, you know. And I felt powerful. So so when I was about 16, I thought I'd go on the Swallows Juniors show.
All right, I remember that, yes.
And Brian Naylor introduced me as the only other person in the show with a deep voice, Ernie Sigley. Was the judge and that. So I wanted to sing and that, you know. And then I had a coffee shop in Glen Ferry in those days that I used to go to a lot called Jackie's.
Yep.
And that was, in the days of the Bohemians and that, you know. So we had a lot of jazz people playing there and that. So I got into music there and that, you know. And but then this was only in the times when I was only alcoholic,
right?
And that, you know, I you know, I liked the giggle juice earlier and that, you know, but
yeah.
Listen to older voices, revisiting through recollections.
once I started to go professional in the theatre, you know, working with the Pram Factory, that's where I first got into the heroin, doing Dimboola. Drinking too much in Dimboola allowed me to believe that no, drinking's not for me. I knifed somebody's four wheels on their Morgan Singer car. So, wow. And once they told me that, I thought, I better stop. So I stopped for 8 years drinking once that fella told me I knifed his four tyres. I could have knifed him instead of his tyres and that, you know. So I gave up drinking for 8 years after that. And that I have the occasional ale now after a show and things like this. I can, I know, I could never regress going back into drugs because I'm the definitive walking, talking role model here in Australia as far as that, you know, for many people. They know I'm the real deal and that, you know. Even Warner Brothers recently, when I got that Warner Brothers gig, when I was in the Mother Country, England, at the Barbican Theatre doing my show, Joe Wright, a Warner Brothers pommy director over there, Cardington and Leavenworth Studios, spotted me and been looking for one more cast member for his latest blockbuster, Pan, a prequel to Peter Pan.
Yes.
So he invited me around to talk because it's well known in the circles around the traps that Mr. Charles is so far up himself he doesn't audition. You know, he fears rejection.
Was it true?
Yeah, that's true. I never audition now because I've had too many disappointments and that. You know, well, I've only done four auditions actually in my time. You know, actually, I've only done
that's
four
not many
auditions.
Years of giving no. your career.
Yes. I just refuse to audition nowadays. But my first audition actually was in a movie called Apocalypse Now. The original story called for an Aboriginal deserter from the Australian Armoury who went and joined the Laos mob and became the conduit into Marlon Brando's encampment with smack and heroin and all that. That was the original script. And, of course, I'd just been shunted out. I didn't know how to handle camera. I was a stage actor, I considered myself to be.
Yes.
So I never got the job, and you know how Hollywood does it. They rewrite certain... So, anyway, I missed out on that, you know. Yeah. And in hair, I missed out on hair too. So I had the hair, I had the singing,
and
I could didn't mind, but I didn't have the rhythms and that. So I worked it out and said, "Hang on, Box Hill Boys Home probably drove out all sense of rhythm that I might have had." That's my excuse. And over the years, theatres have been trying to get me to do Aboriginal dances. I said, no, I can't do it, you know.
No.
I always refuse to do those things because if I feel I'm looking silly, I must look silly. So I don't do them. And I'm uncomfortable because I am, you know, one of the assimilated people.
Yes.
You know, gaining the information about my forebears that doesn't then make me, you know, instantly, you know, with the, you know, it doesn't give me the rhythms. I just had the knowledge of the kinship systems of my own family now. I've got it all down now. And still discovering more, you know, still discovering more people, you know. If you're doing a gig somewhere, you know, somebody's likely to come up and say, "Your father is so and so, my mother," and all that kind of stuff. And it's all good, you know, you're getting people like that coming up. You know, it stamps me. I'm positive now of my identity.
I was going to say, in learning about your own family and the history of the family, you are constantly learning about yourself, aren't you?
Oh, yes. But that's not to say that I'm still not pissed off over the fact that, you know, that I'm still missing so much.
Yeah.
You know, can't dwell on it too much because, you know, somebody like me has got to look forward to the future, you know, because everybody's looking at my life, everybody's looking at my story.
Yes.
And that, you know. And people, you know, are really, you know, even Warner Brothers rang me up, America, once they heard that I was on board. Right. Welcome, Mr. Charles. They rang at 4 o'clock in the morning one time.
Right.
You know,
was that a surprise?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Warner Brothers. Welcome aboard, Mr. Charles. But listen, we do have a query, Mr. Charles. We have your criminal file, your ASIO file, and we're happy with all that. We have just one question, Mr. Charles. How are you off with the drugs? I said, I thought you might have known and that. But it seems like I've become a walking, talking, definitive role model in my community, indeed Australia, as far as that's concerned. Many people are taking a leaf out of my book and trying to ape how I've turned out now. And so that's all we need, Mr. Charles. We just wanted to hear that straight from you. And I said to him, I see risk assessments. You don't want another Philip Seymour Hoffman on your hands. And it's exactly that, Mr. Charles, exactly that. This is what we do now.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks very much, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm
up front.
Yeah.
Join Jack in his story next week and gain a deeper understanding of this man and how he is working to shape the lives of his people while educating the non-Indigenous community. That's next week, Jack Charles, on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth and Victorian governments and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.